Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com. Spurs in full cry here.
Welcome, listeners, to another episode of the Extra Inch Podcast. My name is Windy, and I'm joined by my psychic and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Hello, Windy.
And our tactics guy and joint best friend, Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
Hello, Windy.
And I said that for a reason. Why did I say that, Nathan?
Because we had a question that Bardi has failed to include in the running order about, you know, this introduction that... Look, I understand the situation. I'm under no illusion, right? I very much arrived second on the scene. I'm not trying to edge in on best friend, right? But there's clearly multiple tiers of distance between psychic and best friend and, you know, third mic.
You're right. Leave this with me and we'll sort this out. But speaking of the running order, I just have a bone to pick with Bardi. Because bless him, you know, he put this together and he's done a great job. It's excellent. But the fonts, there's fonts all over the shop. What's happening, Bardi?
Blame Twitter, because when you copy and paste from Twitter, things go weird. So, and I didn't have time to sort it out. I did everything in 20 minutes, man. So, you know, sometimes it's all about substance. It's not about what it looks like. You can have a beautiful footballer who looks great, but if he can't kick the ball, he's useless. So this looks bad, but it's actually really good. It's like the Sissoko running orders.
It does look bad, though. Like, it looks like you've got Georgia, Arial, Roboto, which I didn't even know was a font. You've got bold, you've got italics. I don't know what's going on here. Madness. Anyway, let's talk about football. We played Arsenal. We drew with Arsenal. I'm pretty happy with that result. I did not expect anything from this game at the start of the day, but we got something. However, having been two up, do we have a right to feel disappointed, Bardi?
Yeah, I'm kind of like you that I was really worried about the game because for the first time, we're not going in as favourites and everyone was expecting Arsenal to roll us over. And we got a point, and I would have taken a point before the game, but then obviously we were 2-0 up and we did kind of throw it away. But still, even this morning, hungover, suffering, I'm still happy with the point, and a point away at a top six rival is still a good point.
Sure. Nathan, talking about how Spurs lined up and kind of how you felt before the kickoff, what did you make of a lineup and did you feel optimistic having seen it?
Well, my first thought when I saw 11 names is that it would be a back three with Sissoko at right wing back, and obviously that's not what we saw. But in practice, it was really interesting. If you look back at the games that we've seen, obviously there haven't been many, but the games that we've seen between Pochettino and Emery, you get a lot of really interesting shape switching up, the entry level tactics nerdery. They make a really good example for that sort of stuff, because, you know, one of them will start in 4-2-3-1 and the other will counter that with a 4-3-3 and the other will switch to a diamond and so on, and you get those sort of elements. And so in this game we changed it up, and I think that Pochettino left it with the players to change up as they felt fit. So we were a 4-4-2 defensively, and obviously Arsenal forced us into our defensive shape a lot of the time, but in attack we mixed it up between every possession. So we'd go 4-2-3-1, we'd go to a diamond, we had a sort of a brief spell at the beginning with a 4-2-2-2, players will be switching around as well from in within those various formations. So for our goal, we saw Son go up top and Kane drop deep into the number 10 role, and he was able to win a header against Xhaka as a midfielder and knock it on to Son for the goal.
You're right, and there were also periods where Son pulled out wide to the left and also to the right. I think at one point Eriksen played in parts from the left, in parts in the middle with Sissoko on the right. So there was a lot of changes. I couldn't keep up with the formation. I started off trying to tweet what we were playing or attempting to play, and I basically gave up on that because we were so fluid. It wasn't working at first. So Arsenal were playing this three-man midfield, and they had quite a workman-like midfield of Guendouzi, Xhaka, and...
Torreira.
And they were having the better of it, I thought, in the opening 10 minutes. And I was very worried for Winks and Sissoko and thought they'd be overrun. We then seemed to drop Eriksen sort of into the middle to help with controlling that midfield. And I thought that kind of worked. And Spurs had a really good spell in the middle of the first half where we kept picking Arsenal off on the counter and we kept using the right passes to get the counter going. And then the final pass would be lacking. But it was really encouraging to see Spurs playing some counter-attacking football again, because from my perspective, that's us at our best. We've got such good counter-attacking footballers, and we need to make the most of that. Son was fantastic in this match, I thought. He really tired at the end, and his decision-making wasn't always perfect, but his selfless movement off the ball, his willingness to receive it in an area where he knows he's not going to be able to score himself, but he can do damage to the opposition, was fantastic. And he was sort of back to some of the old Son levels, which is very pleasing. Let's talk a little bit about that lineup in more detail, though. Because you mentioned there, Nath, that you thought when it came out that Sissoko would be playing in the right wing-back role. Why do you think he wasn't? Why do you think Pochettino elected to start Sanchez at right-back and Sissoko just ahead of
him? Well, specifically when you're looking at that 11, if you were to play a back three with Sissoko at wing-back, then the midfield pairing is Winks and Eriksen. And that is an extremely light midfield. And I think that, okay, Arsenal did control the midfield that game. They did have the majority of possession and all of that. But I think we would have had a really bad time of it if that was our midfield. So just based purely on that 11, that makes sense. And then I think if you're choosing between Alderweireld and Sanchez for which one you want to cover at right back, I think basically Sanchez is faster.
Mm.
And it just comes down to that.
And I guess Alderweireld is the better centre-back, sure. So he's sort of having less of a drop-off there.
Prioritise, yeah.
Bardi, you had a question from Loudski on Twitter who says, why on earth did Poch persist with Sanchez at right-back when clearly he was getting targeted and for good reason? And it is fair to say that, you know, Arsenal focus a lot of their attack down that side and Sanchez definitely looked hugely uncomfortable. Bardi, why do you stick with it and not try and change to a back three?
I don't know. I think it was like kind of what Nathan was mentioning, that you had to keep Sissoko centrally. But then someone else did tweet and they said, why? What was the sense in doing it when Sissoko was spent most of his time anyway at right wing back doing a kind of shepherding role? I don't know why he does this. I think Aurier must have really upset him, or he must be really off form. That's the only excuse I can think. Because I thought Sanchez did okay, considering that's not his position, and he was better than I thought he was going to be, because those first opening 4 or 5 minutes, he looked awful, and I thought he was in for a torrid time. He did kind of settle a little bit, but I'm not sure. I don't know why Pochettino did that. He must be really upset with Aurier.
He definitely settled defensively, but he was a bit of a nightmare in possession, and he made it difficult for us to progress the ball forward up that side because they were scared to give him the ball, knowing that he wouldn't necessarily be able to give it up to another white shirt. So it was problematic from that respect.
But he was less of a liability than Rose, which is quite amazing, that you would have thought Rose would have been at least a bit more stable, but he wasn't.
Yeah, Rose's form, you know, it's only three games, but it's four games now. It's problematic. His decision-making, I mentioned in the last podcast, is concerning me. And it was the same again in this match. So the booking he took was for a daft moment where he tried to drop the shoulder in his own half and beat his man, lost the ball, committed a cynical foul, yellow card. And then Pepe seemed to relish going at him multiple times, and Rose would stand off him looking a bit nervous. You know, ultimately he was responsible for potentially both goals. It's kind of harsh to blame Rose for both of them, but, you know, definitely one. Do you think Ben Davis might come in, Nathan?
He might. I don't think it'll be rushed. I thought Rose was mostly fine in the first half. I agree he struggled more in the second. And I appreciate that it's definitely not his first poor performance this season. But I'm patient with him. We know the qualities that he does have. I don't know, maybe he's starting to age. Maybe that's simply it. And that's the reason that we were looking to move him on this summer if an offer came in for him. Yeah, I think Davies, certainly we're going to start getting multiple games in a week. And we'll see Davies come in for those odd games. And then if he's outperforming Rose, they'll switch him around.
Yeah.
But then eventually we'll get Sessegnon into that mix as well.
Yeah, really looking forward to that. I mean, I think to me, Rose looks unfocused. And I think that's it's quite an obvious thing to say when you know there's speculation surrounding their future. So Rose was left behind for the tour so he could look for a new club. It didn't materialise. But we know that, you know, perhaps he doesn't really have his heart set on being at Spurs forever. And to me, that just seems to show he doesn't seem like the focused player he once was. He's lackadaisical and seems to be daydreaming a fair bit. I think Davies is a better player than he's shown in the last 18 months. He played through an injury a lot. And I wouldn't be surprised if he comes back in and gets his place back, certainly while Sessegnon's adapting to life back at left back. We'll move on to talking about Sissoko, because he had a really interesting game. At times he was charging forward with the ball, looking absolutely unstoppable, and then he'd get to the Arsenal penalty area and it would all go horribly wrong. We had a question from A. Stedman 88, who says, how is Sissoko so bad in front of goal? There's one particular shot at the end, Bardi, that he completely sliced and skied, but this, you know, it's a recurring theme. What goes wrong when Sissoko gets in front of goal?
I think the only person that could stop Sissoko is Sissoko, because he's that impressive, charging forwards and breaking lines and causing chaos. But then he just gets into the area and his feet stop working, because he could easily have won it. And there was he could easily have won that game, at least hit the target or work the goalkeeper. And I think there was one in the first half as well where the ball came to him in a promising position just outside the area and he skied it again. I just think had that been Ndombele, I think we might have won that match. And I think Sissoko is an impressive player, and the reason why he gets a lot of praise is because what he does is so obvious. You know, it doesn't take an analytical genius to see what he does well. But unfortunately, he's not got that edge to make him a top three team midfielder.
Yeah, I really hadn't thought about it that way before, but I think you've struck gold there. I think you're spot on. When he does something good, it's pretty obvious because he's running with the ball at his feet and it looks really impressive. To me, and this might just be me being overly negative, it's what he doesn't do that concerns me, and I'm just not a big Sissoko fan. I know he's our cult hero. I know he tried his bollocks off last year and had some really good games, but he's not for me. He's not my cup of tea in midfield, certainly not in midfield too. And Nathan, you tweeted about Sissoko yesterday.
Yeah, so I mentioned the sort of tendency for Spurs fans to pass him the ball, especially, or you know, I tweeted it immediately after that last attack of the game. Because we had a chance to win it there at the last second in, you know, dramatic, what has become a recent thing for Spurs fashion. So I tweeted that Spurs players always pass him the ball on counterattacks. And I had a lot of replies saying, well, it's because he's able to make those runs, because he has that level of fitness and he arrives late, and that's absolutely true. And people also said it's because other teams leave him unmarked because they know he can't do anything. And I think that's true as well. But I still think, like, if you look at that particular incident, okay, so Kane is carrying the ball over a wide left. Dele is central. I think it's Eriksen on the far right, or it could be Lamella. And then Sissoko arrives late through the centre as well. And yes, he's the fastest moving player. Yes, he's got the most energy. Yes, he catches your eye if you're Kane and you're looking for that pass. But I think if he passes to Dele there, as Sissoko is making that run and dragging a player away, that's a goal. I think that Spurs players need to specifically drill into their own minds. If you're in the final thirds, there is just no benefit to passing to Sissoko the ball. And I don't want to like get overly negative on Sissoko here. Like, he did a lot of really good things for us, specifically in this game, but also over the last 18 months. But he just has this limitation and we need to adapt to
it. Yeah, Sissoko is a bit like Dwayne Johnson. He's
here we go.
He's popcorn.
Give me some popcorn.
He's popcorn. He's big blockbuster. You know what you're going to get. You're going to have a great old time watching him, but you're not going to get the nuances. You're not going to get the depth of character you would of someone, I don't know, like an Al Pacino or De Niro like that. And I think that's the problem. He catches your attention. You're focused on him. You love him, but you know exactly where it's going to end. You know how the movie ends.
You know what? I'm a massive fan of The Rock, so I'm going to say he's more of a Nicolas Cage.
Oh, but Nicolas Cage is excellent as well. Nicolas Cage has depth, man. He has depth. Have you not seen Face Off?
I like Face Off, but I do think Nicolas Cage is overrated as well, so it kind of ties in with my opinion on Sissoko. His midfield partner, I thought, was excellent. Harry Winks. I described his performance as, I think I described it as workmanlike on Twitter. And then I kind of corrected myself because it was far more than that. Winks was not only everywhere, but there was a lot of quality there. And when some of our players were a bit frantic and not quite sure what to do and when, Winks was kind of putting his foot on the ball, taking a moment to assess and finding the right path. His bit of play for the penalty that Son won from Xhaka, and oh my God, what a ridiculous tackle that was. That was a lovely piece of skill from Winks, followed by a really good pick out. Why do you think he suddenly looked better, Nathan?
I don't. I think that he was similarly good against City as well, and I think that those bigger games suit him. I've got an article I need to write, a non-Tottenham one, over the next week, but after that it'll be international break, and I'm going to try and do a little focus in on Winks and his game and his strengths and his weaknesses and go into a little bit more detail. But I do think it's very interesting that a player of his type, which is sort of this creative passing number six, is better in the big games than he is against defensive sides.
Yeah, and I think that might change when we've got a fully fit squad, just in terms of who partners him in midfield. Because I don't think it's all on Winks in those games.
Not at
all. I think, yeah, the right blend is yet to be found in certain matches, basically. I'd be really interested to read that article. I think there's a lot to say on Wink. But, I mean, it was really nice to see him getting stuck in as well. He made so many more tackles. I mean, I think he made more tackles than the rest of our players combined in that game. And he loves playing against Arsenal. He was really pumped for it, and he played very, very well. I think one of the reasons that he might have looked better is because Eriksen was back in the team. And wasn't that just a delight? We finally had someone who could pass the ball in a kind of cerebral way, appreciating the movement and the next pass, really. And it made such a difference to our counter-attacking. Bardi, how relieved are you to see Eriksen back in the fold?
Yeah, it was great. And as you said, it helped take some of the pressure off Winks being the guy that's meant to create stuff. I thought Winks had an excellent game. He was determined. He got around the pitch, got stuck in, and passed very wisely as well. And him and Eriksen had a good game.
This game also saw the return of Jan Vertonghen, which I think when we saw the lineup, it was a relief. There was a bit of ring rust though, Nate.
Yeah, maybe a little. He was imperfect for Lacazette's goal, but there was also another point later in the game where we had been attacking and Arsenal broke on the counter, and it was like a 3v3 and he made a vital interception. But again, we're talking about a player who we know what his qualities are. We're just glad to have him back in the team. I'll tell you who else is really glad and really relieved is Pochettino, because post-match in various different press situations, he's been talking about how happy he is suddenly after weeks of misery. He referred to it as his worst period of time at Tottenham the last couple of weeks, and that now he wants to throw a party with the window closing in 2 hours after we're recording now. And that positivity is very infectious. I'm in such a good mood because he's in such a good mood. And I don't know if it's just that Eriksen is staying one more year. Does that really warrant that level of celebration? Do you think that the reason Vertonghen wasn't in the team because he was at risk of going too? Because Vertonghen's come out and he said that I was fit. I played pre-season. I was fit. I was ready to go. It was tactical. And as the tactics guy, I'll tell you that that's bollocks. That's absolute nonsense. So there's clearly stuff going on. I think that it's possible that all three Ajax boys were at risk of going up until the last couple of days. And now they're not. And now we've got a special squad on our hands.
We've got another, 4 or 5 months of them at least. And that's a lovely thing. I suspect we'll try and tie them all down to contracts. And I also suspect that won't quite work out that way. But if we can get one of them tied down to another couple of years, and that's the result at this point. There was an interesting tweet from Grace Robertson on Twitter. Grace is a Liverpool fan, but said, one, Harry Kane dived yesterday. Two, there is nothing wrong with diving, and sometimes he would have won that and thus the game. Bardi, what did you make of the penalty incident?
It was a penalty. Kane maybe made the most of it. Well, he did make the most of it, but he also invited a challenge, and Socrates was stupid enough to go through the back of someone in the penalty area while they're running towards a touchline. It's a penalty, and I don't know why it wasn't given, and VAR probably should have overturned the referee's decision. But as we keep seeing with VAR, they seem very reluctant to change a referee's decision unless it's a totally clear and obvious miss or of an offence.
I was watching it with my other half's dad, who is a Liverpool fan, and he said that he felt that if Kane hadn't exaggerated the fall so much, it would have been given.
Yeah.
I think I agree with that take.
He
arched his back as he went down, and that never looks good. But there were two hands on his back. It's, for me, that is a pretty clear-cut penalty, again, that we've been denied. I feel like we've had a bit of misfortune with some of these calls. I mean, in my opinion, the worst one was Ceballos on Dele, just after Dele had come on, where he wrestled him to the ground on the edge of the box going into the penalty area, so that should have been given as a penalty. And they didn't even check VAR for it. I don't know what was going on there.
I just want to make a note on Ceballos. You can see why, we wanted to buy that player. Because he's got feet on him, he's got vision, he's got a bit of strength, and he's got something about him, that young man.
But we had our own new midfielder who caught my eye, and that was Giovanni Lo Celso. I thought he had a lovely cameo. I was really impressed with his calmness in possession. He kind of, what I liked about him is he didn't rush forward. He moved upfield with the play and just was kind of in the right spot at the right time. Nathan, what did you make of Lo Celso's little cameo?
Yeah, similar to you. He showed one bit of skill where he won a foul. It was really lovely, quick feet. I'm ready to see more of him now. I'm ready for him to start hitting games or coming on at 60 minutes or on a regular basis. Mm. And I'm also hoping, because mostly or maybe entirely, I think he's played in off the right. And I would like to see him play in central midfield at some point.
Yeah, I agree with that. I saw him in the Copa play wide, and he's a good player wide, but I think he belongs centrally.
He's sort of being like Lamella 2.0 at the moment for us, and we've already got Lamella.
Who would you leave out to play him in the middle?
Well, this is the complicated question, and this is something I'm going to sort of go into a little bit of detail once the window closes in 2 hours. Essentially, either the Ndombele and Lo Celso double pivot functions works for the majority of situations, in which case we are able to fit in all of Desk, or that doesn't work as a duo, or we need Winks to start games, we need Winks behind the two of them together, in which case one of those attacking players has to miss out, with Lo Celso playing in a forward role as well. And then it's a matter of, can you play with two playmakers in Eriksen and Lo Celso and leave Son on the bench, or do you need Son's pace? In which place, what, are we benching Eriksen even though we were desperate to keep him one more year? Are we benching our £60 million new signing that we've just brought in? Are we benching Dele? I don't know. I don't think so. It is complicated. I think if we can get that double pivot to work, it'll be a shame for Winks, because I'd love to see him get more game time. We've been talking about his positives. But if we can make those work as a duo and start four near dedicated attacking players at the same time, that's a hell of a lineup.
I mean, the good thing is we have a lot of players who suffer with chronic injuries. We have a lot of
that's
muscular
true.
Injuries.
We'll never see him.
And, you know, this allows Winks' ankles to take a break and not play every game. But if we can get a midfield that's working, where you have Lo Celso and Ndombele as a pivot, then that helps a lot, because it means Winks doesn't have to play every week, which can only be a good thing for his body.
True.
And likewise, Son looked absolutely shattered at the end of last season, so he shouldn't be playing every game. He should be playing like 3/4 of the games, for example. And if he...
Yeah, well, he won't be playing 20 games for Korea this season.
That's very true. Yeah, that's also a good point. But the rotation is a good thing, in my opinion, and having more options is absolutely no bad thing. I do think, though, you kind of need to know your best 11.
Well, especially if you keep making it to Champions League finals.
Sure.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Interesting point. Jonathan Wilson in The Guardian said, in the declining years of Arsene Wenger's reign, Tottenham always outlasted Arsenal. Not anymore. Here it was Arsenal who looked the fresher in the closing stage. Is it just me, or... I mean, I disagree with that massively. Bardi, what did you think of that statement?
Yeah, Jonathan Wilson has had it in for us all season so far. I'm a huge fan, but he's been saying some funny stuff. And I disagree with it. Yes, there were certain individuals that looked a bit leggy, Son and Rose especially, but I think had the game gone 10 minutes more, we would have won, clearly, because we were the more potent on the counter-attack. We had attacking players who were still charging around, Sissoko, Winks. They had Lo Celso and Kane. They were still going at it full throttle. So it's an easy thing to say, but then there's also comments that Pochettino's double training at the moment, that he's putting the players through to kind of make them stronger at the end of the season, is having a detrimental effect on our team.
I do feel like this is a narrative thing, that this is what people want to see, but we soaked up a hell of a lot of pressure in that second half. And don't get me wrong, I was not happy with the way we were defending for like 20, 30 minutes of the second half. But we came on so strong at the end. And Bardi, you said it before we started recording. If the game had been 10 minutes longer, then we'd have won. We were really in the ascendancy when full-time came. We had a couple of good breakaways. But not just that, we were the ones making the intelligent passes. Arsenal were rushing things and wasting opportunities, whereas we were taking our time to pick the right path. And we came really close to winning it at the death. So I don't agree with Wilson there. And I, like you, I am a big fan of his work. I've not kept up with what he's been up to this year, but if you say he's got it in for us, then I trust you. I did notice as well that on the Totally Football show, they had Tom Williams on and Matt Davis. Is it Matt Davis, Adam? And they were both very negative about Spurs' performance, which I found quite surprising, because for me, this was like a bit of a return to form. And maybe it's because as Spurs fans who are kind of so, you know, we're so close to the club in terms of how much we watch, how much we analyse, how much we talk about it, we kind of been getting quite depressed in these opening few games. And then in our last podcast, we were trying to put a positive spin on things. And maybe so this is perhaps, maybe it's our own biases coming out and we want to see good things, so we're seeing good things. But I don't know, I feel like the media are being a little harsh after this performance. Nathan, what are your thoughts?
I think that we set up in the smart way, given the context, which is that we were away at the Emirates and we were playing with last season's midfield. And I think that we matched them on both the scoreline and on expected goals. I think that we utilised a very clever counter-attacking game in the first half and it sort of slipped away in the second half. I think that that is more tactical than it is about fitness. Although the defending side genuinely tends to exhaust more than the possession side. But I'm not worried about our fitness at all. And I think that there's a win would have been better, but there's a lot more positives to take from that game. It's never nice to allow Arsenal to have more of the ball than you. And given the trajectory of the two clubs over the last 5 years, you'd love the idea of sort of punishing them every time you see them, but that's not going to be the reality of the situation.
And they're at home. They're at home. They've got all their new signings fit. They're in a better squad position than we are at the moment.
That's it. I'm happy.
I'm really happy. I think if that game is played in 2 months' time, then we win.
Yeah.
And I know we've beaten them once in the last God knows how many years at the Emirates, but I really feel like we're better than them now. And that was Arsenal. I feel like that was the best they could do, and we still drew with them. With like a million injuries, with God knows how many right backs missing, Davinson Sanchez filling in a position he's never played in his life before. We looked fine, and better than fine at the end. Harlow C says, what did you think of Lamela's performance? Bardi, did you have any thoughts on how Lamela did in this game?
I thought he did okay. That was the worst right-footed shot that we know he's like severely one-footed.
For the goal?
Yeah, that was tame as anything.
So
works the keeper.
Yeah, yeah. No, seriously, I thought when I first saw that, I was like, that is the softest goalkeeping error. But when you see it from the reverse angle, it actually does like come at quite a tricky angle. So I didn't think it was that awful.
I reckon I would have saved it and probably held that. I mean, but he worked the goalkeeper, which is something that Sissoko doesn't do. So it doesn't matter. He worked the goalkeeper. He forced him into save, and you know, we got the rebound. And I thought he was quite involved. When Kane hit the post, he was involved down there as well. He was, you know, he was tenacious. He was good most of the time. He was good on the ball. He worked the tight space as well, and you know, he was good. He was solid Lamella, which is what we want to see more of.
I really liked his movement on the counter as well. Like just pulling out wide at just the right moment, ready to receive a pass or not, or just to drag a defender away. And that was nice. That was kind of Lamella rolling back the years a little bit. I enjoyed that.
If only he was a little bit faster.
I know.
He's become so slow. If only he was a little bit faster.
Yeah, you're right. He's still got the speed of thought, but his legs can't quite do it in time.
I mean, if his legs don't completely fall off, he'll still be playing football at 38, 39 in Argentina. He will now become a defensive midfielder, like you could see him in a deep line playmaker role, just kind of beating the press and laying the ball off. And I can see he's still got his legs and his brain, but yeah, he's got no speed.
He's such a funny player, Lamella, because he's so different to what we thought we were getting with him. I mean, if you just track his Spurs career, it is actually quite insane. He was brought in as Gareth Bale's replacement, and he was a nippy winger who got loads of goals, loads of assists. And he's just not like that now at all. He's like a defensive forward who creates stuff with chaos and with limbs and elbows. It's so weird what he's become, but I kind of love him. I do really love him. And I love how much he hates Arsenal. It's great to see in the derby games. Another question from Clement952, who says, do you think Serge still has a future at Tottenham? Will KWP become the main right back this season? If I take that one first. So Aurier hadn't played a minute of pre-season. He hadn't played a minute of games in the main season yet. So I wasn't surprised to see him on the bench rather than starting, particularly given the fact that he's been linked with various other clubs, including AC Milan. And I think Walker Peters has absolutely cemented his place now as first choice right back. But with him injured, if he's not back straight after the international break, I think Aurier will come in. I don't think the Sanchez experiment will get a second run out. And I think Aurier will get a game. What I'd prefer to see, if Aurier is to stay, I'd prefer to see him play a few games for the under-23s, who, as it happens, are struggling at fullback at the moment for various reasons. Get him fit that way. Give him games with them. Get him match sharp. And then we have a player who can come in and rotate with Walker Peters. What do you think, Nathan? Has he got a future?
What I would do with Serge Aurier is tell him to f*** with
Aurier. Oh my God. Does he get a place in your Champions League squad?
He doesn't get a place in any squads. I would refuse to even write his name on any relevant documentation.
I thought Pochettino was harsh, but this is next level. Is he also eating in the youth player canteen?
No, he has to forage go to Tesco.
For food on the train.
Yeah, that's it. We've got a wooded area, I think.
good luck out there, Serge. Give your training kit back. I mean, surely he's going to go in the next window.
Again, we've got an hour 45 minutes. I haven't checked the Twitter while I've been on the podcast. Hopefully, he's already gone and we don't know it yet.
PSG have signed Icardi, so Dybala's coming to Spurs in January. That's some ITK view.
It's a lock.
Yeah,
I love it. Are there any other players you want to talk about that we've not touched on yet?
Yeah, I'd like to give a shout out to Hugo. I thought he played great. He made some cracking saves, kept us in the game. There was a few times during his goal kicks with Toby and Jan that gave me heart palpitations. But I thought he had a great game and it's lovely to see him in a bit of form again.
What did you make of those short passes out from the back, Nathan?
The sort of the two centre backs right next to the keeper as a sort of a passing system. Certainly Arsenal gave us trouble with that. That changing the rule, I mean, I could talk for an hour about the new setup. It's a dramatic change. It's not like a novelty rule. It really is going to change how we build play and how teams press from goal kicks as well. It'll be really interesting to see what sort of becomes the norm, what sort of becomes the trend. I think I mean, I need to look at the exact wording of the rule as to where players can stand, but I think that we're probably going to start to see an exaggeration of what is referred to as... oh, God, no, I'm not even going to try and say it. But essentially, the defensive midfielder dropping in, I think we might sort of see Harry Winks standing a yard away from Lloris with the centre-backs out on the touchline and sort of interesting stuff like that. But before that, I think we'll see a lot of... interesting twists and techniques and shapes on how to pass out from the back. And I also think sometimes he'll pass it 2 yards to Toby Alderweireld, who will then in turn punt it way up the pitch.
So my take on this in this particular game was that Hugo was giving the centre-backs kitten. And so they stood closer and closer and closer because they were panicking. But I've seen takes that we were using that system to suck Arsenal players onto us and then enabling us to play a long ball. Which we had a bit of success with the long balls, you know, for the opening goal, for example.
It's true.
I genuinely thought from Alderweireld's body language, he just didn't want to be too far away from Hugo. There were a couple of times where he sold a pass too short out from the back and Arsenal had a player on rushing. Vertonghen had a couple as well where he underhit a pass and it nearly went to an Arsenal player pretty much in our own box. And we need to work on that. We really need to, on the training ground, do some serious work on how we progress the ball when Hugo has the ball. Because that's going to be a huge facet for all of the big teams who play out from the back and don't just try and lump the ball forward. That's going to be a big change to become accustomed to. And we did not seem to have it down in this match. I'm absolutely in favour of playing out from the back. I'd rather see that than, you know, long balls. But I did not feel confident with Lloris's distribution. I mean, basically the first time we tried to play long from the back, you put it straight out for a throw. So yes, going short seems to be a better option, but not with Alderweireld basically sat on him. It made no sense. Made no sense at all to me. And maybe it's hampered by the fact that Sanchez was playing at right back as well. And that's kind of one less passing option anyway. I don't know. What do you make of Harry Kane, Bardi?
I thought Kane was good. He was back to being more of a number nine. I know he did drop into the space occasionally, but I think Kane, when he focuses on being a striker rather than trying to do everything himself, is when we get peak Kane. And I was very happy with
that. For me, that was his best performance of the season by a way, despite the fact that he scored 2 goals against Villa. And I think it's no surprise that that came with Lucas not on the pitch. Is that fair, Nath?
Possibly. I think that's something that we need to look at over a greater period of time. I do think that sort of the single striker setup probably... he's an interesting... Because if you think of him as sort of like a number nine who's also a number 10, and he thrives when he plays in either of those situations, why doesn't he thrive when he plays as one of two strikers in a sort of between the role situation? But maybe that's just the intricate details of his strengths and weaknesses. I don't know. I need to see more, to be sure.
And the weird thing is he's linked so well with Dele in the past, but I think that says a lot about Dele, and he is 100%, such an underappreciated 100%. Player in terms of his movement. I think there are two facets to this. I think it's the most simplistic one is Lucas takes up Kane's space. And I think there is definitely some truth in that. But I also think it's a mindset thing. I think when he's the guy doing all the hold-up play and making all the runs, he's focused on doing all the hold-up play and making all of the runs. When Lucas is there to do that, Kane kind of doesn't know what to do. And I think this game showed him at his best. I mean, he wasn't perfect. He's not back into his best form yet. But he was doing all the right Harry Kane things. And that was a great sign, in my opinion. I'm very optimistic about what Kane's going to do this year. I think he's going to refine that form of 12 months ago. I'm very hopeful.
I love him.
I love him too. I absolutely adore him. That penalty was just perfection. He doesn't just find the corner, he finds a side netting, and it's every time, and it's ridiculous.
He used to be bad at penalties. He missed a penalty in his debut for the club, I think. And also, like, I remember watching him miss. I was in the crowds behind the keeper for a penalty miss early on when he was sort of breaking through, maybe under Sherwood. And then his next few, he scored them, but they were sort of a bit dodgy and scuffed and possibly savable. And now every time he takes a penalty, you're so confident, and he hits them in a way that you couldn't save them, that even if you knew exactly where he was going to place it, good luck.
Yeah, he missed against Hearts in the Europa League.
Yeah,
he also missed against West Ham when Winks scored, but he did actually get the rebound, so we let him off. But it's just such an easy thing for them to practice, because you're going to get seven to eight penalties. And it's just, if it's 7 to 8 guaranteed goals, as long as, and all it is technique and practice and practice. And that's what we know about Kane, is that he the way he shoots, it's all about refining his technique and repetition.
Penalties. Sorry, yeah,
and the shot that hit the post was incredible. I mean, it was.
Oh, mate.
He shouldn't have taken that on, but then he got such a... He's got his foot right across the ball that it was a shame it didn't go in, because it would have been a great derby goal. Just then, that was just pure technique.
Yeah, it was. The fade he got on that, oh, God. Yeah. I really... The move as well was just glorious. I really wanted that goal to go in so many ways. And the thing about penalties, Kane makes penalties look so much easier than they actually are. The penalties are hard. You know, there's probably... I don't know what the XG is in a penalty. Probably 0.75 or something.
0.7, yeah.
They are not easy. And Kane's XG in penalties must be a lot higher than that. Let's put it that way. He's a very, very, very accomplished penalty taker. One of the best I've ever seen. And long may that continue. Boys, it's been a joy to talk about some happy Spurs things. And I think we're going to the international break with a lot of positivity and optimism, which is nice.
Come on, you Spurs.
You've been listening to The Extra Inch. Thanks to Nathan A. Clark for production. Thanks to Barney for being Italian. Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork. Thanks to David Lindner for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter at Davy Shambles and his SoundCloud, D. Lindner. Do check him out. He's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about...
Coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.